It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. When you vote in the New York Democratic primary on September 10th, you won't only be nominating a mayoral candidate, you'll be choosing the next public advocate for New York City, the job now held by Bill de Blasio. Since there is no Republican candidate for the office this year, the primary is the election. So to help you choose your next public advocate, we have all four leading contenders standing by. We'll do about 7 minutes with each right now, beginning with New York State Senator Daniel Squadron of Brooklyn and Lower Manhattan. He won the New York Times endorsement over the weekend, you might have seen. Senator Schumer has been out front in TV commercials for Squadron as well. Senator Squadron, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian, and thank you for doing this.
And you all have to make people care enough to even vote. Few people know what the public advocate does with a small staff of about 20. What specifically would you hope to accomplish in the next 4 years that the Office of Public Advocate can usually do? And let me say, and all the candidates listening ready to follow you should hear this, I think in the debates, you've all had a tendency to just list positions that you care about on different policies on crime and education and everything else. I really want to know what you think you can do with the limited powers of the Office of Public Advocate over the next 4 years.
Thank you for that. You know, there is, I think, the tendency when you get asked questions, you want to answer them so that voters know where you are. But the focus of the job and the focus with limited resources is the core of this office that really should play an essential role in the city. When you have huge communities, as I've talked about on the campaign trail, 12,000 foster kids, 14,000 people in city jails, more than 51,000 people who are homeless, 21,000 of them are kids, nearly 500,000 New Yorkers in public housing, none of whom have high-powered lobbyist organized constituencies or city hall on speed dial, you really do need a public advocate to partner with these communities to not just give them a voice, but figure out how to get results. I have put out a detailed plan for the office that actually works within its scope. Now, I'd say it's probably more like closer to 30 staff than 20, but, you know, I think in scale, the point you make is a really important one. And, you know, we know it doesn't have budgetary authority. It doesn't have veto power. What it does have is a number of different tools that, if used in combination, can get results. I've divided the office into four areas: the advocate for the most vulnerable, the children's advocate, the housing advocate, and the accountability advocate. Within each, I have specific ideas that are within the scope and resources of the office. For example, the advocate for the most vulnerable would take on our city jails, where there's really a crisis right now of violence, of order, and of policy. And it's not one that you're hearing about anywhere in the political process, in the political conversation. You know, there was just a couple of weeks ago a fight there that went on for 45 minutes until the people fighting asked the corrections officers to stop the fight. That is an outrage. And that's the kind of thing that the public advocate needs to take on, frankly, because no one else is.
One of the roles that public advocate has been is as a progressive thorn in the side of less progressive mayors. Mark Green used the office that way with Mayor Giuliani, and de Blasio to some degree with Mayor Bloomberg. And a lot of people like that. Your opponents, Letitia James and Kathy Guerrero, are running more as thorn in the side candidates this year than you are. James uses that term, thorn in the side. Why shouldn't New Yorkers choose someone who is that kind of fighter for this particular office?
Well, look, I'm really proud of the fights I've taken on and gotten results on. You know, when this mayor was charging rent to families in homeless shelters, I got together with the leading homeless advocates. We fought back against the policy, but we didn't stop there. We ended and changed the policy. You know, when people complain about subway service in my district, didn't just complain about it. We worked with the MTA and created something called a full-line review that changes the way the MTA deals with subway lines one after the other and actually improves their on-time performance, their service for customers that's now going to get used across the system. You know, you need to be willing to stand up to the decision-makers, stand up to the mayor or the governor or the city council speaker. But doing it for its own sake doesn't change lives, doesn't make a difference for any New Yorker, doesn't make this a fairer or a better city to live in. And so my focus is certainly on standing up to bad policy. I was just talking about it in terms of jails. I'd love to talk about it in terms of school discipline, in terms of parks policy. and figure out how to get results. You know, that's what I did on an issue that we talked about a lot yesterday in the debate, and I know you focused on a lot, with the Harbor Park from Brooklyn Bridge Park to Governor's Island to the East River waterfront to the west side of Manhattan and Queens and North Brooklyn.
There have only been three public advocates since the job was created in 93, Mark Green, Betsy Gottbaum, and Bill de Blasio. Was there a leading accomplishment by each that you would cite as a model? I ask because some people say this office should be abolished because it doesn't do anything. Does it have a record of doing anything?
Well, look, I do think in the Giuliani administration, the role that Mark Green, who, by the way, has endorsed me for this office, as has Betsy Gottbaum, which I'm very proud of, I think the role that Mark Green played in that administration was particularly important broadly. He got some real specific accomplishments, too. You know, his work helped lead to a strengthening of the Citizens Complaint Review Board, which deals with police abuses. He was a big part of creating the great campaign finance system that we have in New York City. Betsy Gottbaum focused, as she would say, on the ombuds role, you know, taking on issues of food stamp recipients, people who are at risk of homelessness, especially on food stamps. She got results as well in better service from city agencies for folks who desperately need it. Bill de Blasio has a number of things that I would actually continue. If you look at my detailed plan for the office that has the four bureaus with 20 specific ideas in the scope of the office, a number of them are frankly continuations of what de Blasio has done. It's time that we have some continuity between public advocates so that people start to think about the institutional role it plays in our city and in their lives. So oversight of the transition in special education that's happening in the school system. FOIL and transparency to make sure, you know, that one of the core functions of the public advocate's office, which is forcing the agencies to be more transparent and effective, happens. I think that it's critical that we find ways to continue, and I think each of them have brought something significant to the job.
30 seconds. Anything you want to say to the voters?
What I would say is the public advocate does have this essential role to play in the city. It is not going to solve all of the city's problems. And if it just chases headlines and talks about the big hot-button issues and doesn't, in addition, focus on the specific ways it can make a difference, then it's a lost opportunity for a whole lot of New Yorkers who desperately need a results-focused advocate. And that's what I want to be.
State Senator Daniel Squadron, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We continue with 7 minutes each from the four leading candidates for New York City Public Advocate. Up next, Reshma Sajani, among other things, a former assistant public advocate under Bill de Blasio and founder of the group Girls Who Code. Her endorsements include the Queens County Democratic Party, Russell Simmons, and Deepak Chopra. Ms. Sajani, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you. As I said to Mr. Squadron, you all have to make people care enough to even vote for public advocate. Few people know what the office does with a small staff of about 20 employees. What specifically would you hope to accomplish in the next 4 years that the Office of Public Advocate can actually do?
So, Brian, I'm the only one who's running who's had experience in that office. I know what it can do. I know what it should do. And I've said I want to reinvent the office. I was the first to kind of release a reorg. I want to have four deputy public advocates, one that's focused on housing, one that's focused on jobs, one that's focused on education, and one that's focused on women and children. You know, 46% of our city is living under poverty. That's 3.6 million people. And they need an advocate. They need a champion, someone who's going to wake up every day and think about them. And I've already had a track record of success of doing exactly that as Bill de Blasio's deputy public advocate. When I saw that we weren't doing enough to help undocumented students who were trapped and not being able to go to college, I didn't wait for Albany to act or Washington to act. I answered the call, and I created a scholarship program, and we sent these young, hardworking kids to college. When I saw that the EDC was way too focused on big business rather than small dip business, I did the first ever survey of immigrant entrepreneurs, and we got them access to capital. President Obama called me to thank me for my work and to say that he was taking the model that I had built all across the country. And now, when I've seen our young women that are trapped in this technology gap, I didn't just have a press conference. I created a program, and we are teaching 160 young women how to computer program, getting them jobs at Google, eBay, Facebook, getting them the opportunity to make $83,000 a year as a website programmer. It's about taking problems that are affecting large communities and solving them.
So how would that help, or how would you help take people out of poverty in New York City in particular, since you cited that rate?
So first of all, it's really about jobs and education. You know, my family came here as refugees. My father came here with nothing. I am only standing here today, Brian, because of education. And right now, we're not teaching our kids anything. They're graduating, they're going to CUNY, and they're taking remedial classes.
So you're not going to be the school's chancellor if elected. You're going to be the public advocate.
I am. And what I'm going to do is get computer science education in every classroom, because that is where the jobs are at. There's 1.4 million jobs open in those fields. I've already worked with Assemblyman Hevesy to draft legislation to get computer science into the classroom. I've already started working with the United Federation of Teachers to start training our teachers. And I'm working with technology companies to get them to adopt schools to get computer science education.
So what do you do? Push the chancellor and the next mayor to make that a priority in their funding?
You don't even need to push the chancellor. You need to go, first of all, if Twitter and I decided that we were going to go adopt a school in Southeast Queens and get computer science education there, we can do that. We don't need the chancellor's permission. If the United Federation of Teachers and I decided, as we already have, that we have to retrain teachers to get them to teach computer science, I don't need the chancellor's permission. The thing is, people don't understand that the office is a powerful office that can do that on their own, that doesn't have to listen to anybody or get permission from anybody. But you need an innovative public advocate who can do that.
In both of the televised debates, the issue of your background on Wall Street has come up. And in fact, the last time you were a candidate on this show, you were challenging Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney in a primary in 2010. She had just spearheaded the Credit Card Holders Bill of Rights. And of course, that was soon after the financial crisis. And you were defending Wall Street. Quoted by the New York Times that year, the paper said, Ms. Sajani in an interview said she was, quote, running on my Wall Street record, not from it. If you go to Texas, you'll never hear a congressional member speak poorly of the oil industry. In Michigan, you'll never hear a congressional member speak poorly of the auto industry. This is our bread and butter. So are those the words of someone who Democratic primary voters want to elect to be the advocate for the disenfranchised?
Absolutely, because those are just one of my words. And I have written tirelessly about how I support Dodd-Frank, that it didn't go far enough, that I support the Volcker Rule, that we should have had real reform on credit agencies. I was a compliance lawyer working in Wall Street. I saw what happens when we don't have tough regulation, and that's why I ran. Now, that doesn't mean, and that's what my quote meant, that everybody that works on Wall Street is bad. There are some good, hardworking people there, and there are some bad people, and they should be in jail. And I, as the next public advocate, will make sure that we have strong regulation. I am the only one who's running who's proposed that I will be a fiscal watchdog, that we will strengthen the Community Reinvestment Act so that banks are not taking advantage of underserved communities. I am the only one that said I will create a mortgage foreclosure prevention fund so that so many of our people that are going through foreclosures right now have actual legal representation. If you want to get the crooks, you need someone who understands the financial services industry and who can actually go out there and get them. And in my record, when it comes to Wall Street, it's been really clear. I was a lawyer. I didn't make investment decisions. I didn't trade stocks. And it was one part of my professional career. For the first 3 years of my career, I worked at the same law firm that Kirsten Gillibrand did. And then I worked as a lawyer in financial services while helping people go through asylum and deportation, helping President Obama. And then I spent 4 years helping undocumented students, helping young women that are not getting access to technology. I have been a public servant my entire life, and I am so proud of my career. I think that the Wall Street narrative has been brought up to be a distraction from my opponents who don't want to talk about their record. And I think it's so important right now. You know, people are sick and tired of the political fighting. You know, we feel this when we talk about the amount of conversations that we have about scandal. Let's talk about the issues and let's look at people's record of what they have actually done to help people. And my record is long. When I graduated, when I graduated law school, I was hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debt. You know, I had to work in the private sector to help pay off that loan and to help my family get up on their feet. I'm proud of that. I'm not ashamed of that. Because while I was working in the private sector, I was also doing a lot of good.
30 seconds left. Anything you want to say to the listeners?
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Reshma Sajani, and I am unabashed about the fact that I am going to fight for women, fight for children, make sure that our seniors have permanent housing, fight for immigrants, fight for vets to have job. We need an advocate who is going to get something done. It's not about shouting and screaming. It's about having a real record of achievement. And as a deputy public advocate under Bill de Blasio, I'm the only one who understands this office, the only person right now who has rolled up their sleeves, knows how to build something from scratch, and has gotten something done, has gotten people jobs, has gotten young kids the educational opportunities that they need, has helped fight for housing for NYCHA residents. I have done that, and I will do that as your next public advocate.
Reshma Sojani, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are speed dating the public advocate candidates here on The Brian Lehrer Show today, about 7 minutes each from the four leading candidates for New York City public advocate. Up next, still to come, Kathy Guerrero and Letitia James. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We continue with 7 minutes each from the four leading candidates for New York City Public Advocate. Up next, Kathy Guerrero. Among other things, she teaches education at NYU and the Columbia University Teachers College. She worked for Cardinal Egan for about a decade, and she has some considerable union support, including the Police Officers Union and the School Employees Union. Ms. Guerrero, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, welcome, welcome. Thank you for having me.
As I said to the other candidates, you all have to make people care enough right. about the Office of Public Advocate to even vote. And with the small staff of 20 or so employees, what specifically would you hope to accomplish in the next 4 years that the Office of Public Advocate can actually do?
Exactly, what it can actually do. And I've been saying that for months and months, for 15 months. What can you actually really do with this office with an eviscerated budget of $2 million? So we created the Office of the Public Advocate Think Tank, which is going to add an additional 50 people for the low, low price of a computer and a desktop. Harnessing the intellectual capital of graduate students, and they're going to come together, and I'm going to take 30 of them, and we'll start to churn out 3 month, 6 month, 1 year snapshot studies to put teeth around an often toothless job. So when someone says to me, Kathy, this is an issue, I don't just rail to the gods. I actually put some teeth around it with data. I'll take 10 people. I'll reinforce the ombudsman's wing, which is, by the way, what I'm supposed to do. It's not sexy and it's not hot, but it's actually an extraordinary spot for New York City. And the last 10 I'm going to put in the legal wing so I can actually start to churn out court cases, because that's a big tool in the tool belt. I've been planning this race for 20 years, so you'd better hope I had a plan. And that type of creative, on-the-ground thinking that actually understands the construction of the job really, well, people get it.
What's left of the ombudsman function? Before, when this job was created, it was before 311.
Right.
And some people say 311 made the ombuds function of the public advocate obsolete because anyone can call a number now and get help navigating the bureaucracy.
Right. 311 is extraordinary, but what 311 primarily is a referral service. The ombudsman's mission and the ombudsman's job in the public advocate's office is to actually connect with the person and say, let's fix this. Let's get you to the other side. Let's not just be a liaison from this to that. And there have been extraordinary ombudsman wings. Betsy Gottbaum, you know, really created in such a way, you pick up the phone and my water bill just doubled. I just don't want you to pass me off to another department. I want you to find the problem. I want you to fix it, and I want you to get my money back.
What do you mean you've been preparing for this run for 20 years? Why didn't you run 4 years ago or 8 years ago?
Exactly. So, you know, as I said, when I was about 20 years old, I had a professor say to me, what do you want to be when you grow up, kid? And I told her the truth. I want to run the city. And she said, good luck. It'd be nice if you knew something. And it's like any good teacher, and I am the daughter of two New York City public school teachers. I got the moment, and it stopped me, because it would be nice if our elected officers knew something. If they're, and trust me, I am the only non-politician in this race. I run against three politicians. It would be nice if they knew something beyond the skill set of having run and been in office. And so I've planned for 20 years to run for the only job I've ever wanted. And I went and got a PhD in schools politics. I believe the interests of children, the expert interest, should be at the center of every conversation. I went and worked for 10 years for the Archdiocese of New York, managing extraordinary things like the papal visit, like the Office of Strategic Planning, so I could have a fully formed life, a full breadth of experiences. I'm a mother. I'm a fighter. These sets of experiences bring weight to an office that most people just don't understand.
With your Archdiocese of New York involvement, are you also running as the social conservative in the race to any degree?
Yeah, I don't really think that. I am a very proud Catholic and Christian. What I run for is the working class grinder. I don't have to tell you, Brian, I'm the most endorsed candidate in this race, 47 unions and counting. I'll have 60 before I'm finished. I am the working class union candidate unequivocally. I have been endorsed by faith-based leaders around the city of all faiths, rabbis and priests and pastors. pastors and imams, because I know that the advocates in the neighborhoods already exist, and often they're in churches and synagogues. You have to go to the people, and like my mother, who was a teacher and a mother of six, she would say to me often, if you want to be a servant, Kathy, she wasn't raising a politician. If you want to be a servant, you serve people what they need and when they need it. You've got to go seek out the advocates, seek out those that know more than you, and draw them into the conversation of their own lives. Brian, I exist in this race, leading in every poll, 1-2, 2-1, the most endorsed candidate many times over, because of the working class and the middle class having been removed from their story. I exist leading in every metric because I rebuke the notion that you need big money and big institutional power to get to center stage. That's why I'm winning. They banked on the fact that their millions and millions of dollars and all their weighty political prowess would actually gift them the center ring. And, Brian, they're wrong.
What do you mean by the working class been removed from their stories?
They've been removed from power in their own lives. I'll give you an example. In fact, my area of expertise, mayoral control of the New York City public schools, has been an abject failure on the backs of the New York City public school children. Every single stakeholder has been removed from power. The parents, the teachers, the principals, the community activists on the ground. I am a mother of a three-year-old daughter. Who knows more about my child? My parents were teachers for 35 years. Who knows more about teaching than them?
Would you turn it back to the 32 community school districts?
From 1967 to 2002, you referenced the decentralization of the public schools. There were issues there, and I wouldn't go all the way back, but I would go to a model that takes out that 13-person board, and the mayor, as you know, has 9 votes, otherwise known as a rubber stamp, and I put those 9 votes back into the community, 5 with the board presidents, et cetera, because right now there's only the chief pedagogue is the mayor. He orders the toilet paper on a Tuesday and the math test on a Thursday, and Brian, those test scores that came out a week and a half just put a period on the end of the sentence. We had been failed. Our special needs children have been failed. Our bilingual education children have been failed. Our high schools have been failed. They are not more literate. They are not going to college at higher rates. They're not getting jobs at higher rates. We have to put the stakeholders of New York City back in the game of their own lives. I exist, and my aggressive, successful campaign, 15 days away from victory, exists because that narrative is playing all over the city.
You mentioned being the faith-based candidate and the broadly union-endorsed candidate, including Police Benevolent Association, which has gotten some press.
Yes.
If New Yorkers come to you as public advocate with a problem with the police or looking for help accessing the public funding for their abortion, for example, would you help them?
I absolutely would. As my mother said, you serve people what they need and when they need it. You are the voice for the voiceless and the voice of unheard, and it is all voices. And whatever view someone may have here or there, your idea is it's a big tent, and everybody has to come and have a space and a place to be heard. That's the job of a public servant, capital P. Public is the highlight.
But you're also the candidate, I think the only candidate among the four who have endorsed stop and frisk. Is that accurate? And is that where the Democratic primary voters want you to be this year?
Right. So endorsing stop and frisk is not the word. What I believe is stop and frisk is a tool, and I'm the only one that has stood against those two bills that are now in city council and have been passed as of Friday. Those two bills are not the fix. There are problems. There have been grievances. The community is correct, but those bills have caused a few things and will cause more. Low morale. They've caused confusion. I want to know who's in charge. Is it the inspector general? Is it the federal monitor? Is it the mayor? Is it the commissioner? We don't know. Neither do the NYPD and the men and women on the streets that are supposed to serve us. We've got problems, Houston. The issue is not stop and frisk. The issue now is who's in charge and how do we really fix it?
All right. 30 seconds. Anything you want to say to the voters?
Yes. My name is Kathy Guerrero. I am your next public advocate. I'm a fighter. I'm the only educator in the race. I am the unequivocal union candidate. I'm somebody's mother. This is very, very personal. I exist to push back against the narrative that politicians get gifted into center ring just because they are them. I am the only non-politician in this race. If this resonates with you, if you've had enough of big money and big power telling you what to do and how to vote, I am your girl.
Kathy Guerrero, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue with 7 minutes each from the four leading candidates for New York City Public Advocate, and we conclude with City Council Member Letitia James of Brooklyn. Among her claims to fame, she was the rare council member elected with neither Democratic nor Republican support originally. She won on the Working Families Party line and has since gotten Democratic Party support for her reelection. Her endorsements in this race include the Teamsters and Mason Tenders Union. Councilwoman, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Any other endorsements you want to throw in there?
Sure,
at the top?
Tenants PAC, National Organization for Women, Planned Parenthood, League of Conservation Voters, 1199, 32BJ, DC 37, and a list of other labor organizations representing good, hardworking, working people in the city of New York.
Do you want to compare your union endorsements to the many that Kathy Guerrero was in? Was citing, are they from different categories that have a meaning?
Well, I haven't been endorsed by law enforcement officers, and most of the endorsements for my opponent primarily are law enforcement officers, and primarily it's in response to my proud support to override the mayor's veto on stop and frisk and ending racial profiling in the city of New York, because it has no place in a civil society. And as you know, 4 million young black and Latino men within the last 12 years have been stopped, 80% of them black and Latino, and 90% of them have done absolutely nothing wrong.
Well, I've been asking all the candidates, as you've probably been hearing, to make people care enough to even vote in this election, since few people know what the public advocate does, and it has a small staff of about 20 employees. So let me get into it with you in a slightly different way, given your answer. Is there anything that the public advocate could actually do with respect to stop and frisk, or is that just your position on a policy issue, but it's not really relevant to the job?
I think it's very relevant to the job. Quite simply, the Office of Public Advocate has five functions. One, as you just discussed, ombudsman, appointments to several agencies, including city planning, where we can talk about permanent affordable housing and mandatory inclusionary zoning. Two, the second appointment is on the pension board, where we can talk about targeted investment all throughout the city of New York. Three, you are the charter cop. Four, you preside over the city council, you introduce legislation, you can hold hearings. And four, you can issue performance audits on city agencies and primarily provide oversight over city agencies, and you're the spokesperson for the city of New York. And clearly, in your position as someone who can introduce legislation in the city council and who can hold hearings, and as someone who can speak on behalf of everyday working people in the city of New York, clearly the Office of Public Advocate is a powerful office in the city of New York
to
correct wrongs.
So as it relates to stop and frisk?
As it relates to stop and frisk, and as it relates, obviously, to issues that everyday New Yorkers are facing, particularly as they go up against powerful interests in the city of New York.
What else would be near the top of your list?
So the top of my issues, as you know, I'm organizing low-wage workers in the city of New York, particularly low-wage workers who are facing billionaire fast food owners. And we are organizing this week a significant number of fast food workers trying to get them living wages in the city of New York. Because it's unconscionable that most of these individuals who make minimum wage or barely above minimum wage. In addition, fighting for women's rights, making sure that individuals, the rights of we respect the rights of women, particularly as it relates to cracking down on anti-choice, limited service health centers who deny women the right to choose. As we anticipate the passage of immigration reform in the city of New York, ensuring that all immigrants are come out of the shadow and that we organize them and get them to become full-fledged citizens of the city of New York, contributing to our local economy. And just working on behalf of tenants who unfortunately are being squeezed out of the city of New York. As you know, I have a record of standing up against powerful interests in the city on behalf of everyday New Yorkers. I do not represent the well-connected and those who are well-heeled. I represent everyday working people in the city of New York standing up against those who would hijack our government.
In the New York Times endorsement of Daniel Squadron, they noted that you had been asked at last week's debate a question about your campaign finances and ducked the question. So let me ask you again. Have you taken money from a developer while deciding on a project involving them?
No. The issue is the following. It's called the BAM South project. And the BAM South project, I had originally supported and then opposed it because it was tied to the demolition of a historic library where Girl Scouts meet. And it's a very historic library in Park Slope on 4th Avenue and Pacific Street. And when I found out that this project included the demolition of the library, I came out and opposed it. In addition to that, I wanted to fight for more affordable housing, given the great displacement in downtown Brooklyn. And so I opposed the project. The developers, the owners automatically removed support from my candidacy. I was successful in saving the library, getting more affordable housing. And the only thing that I got in exchange for it was a box of chocolate mints.
I read in the Daily
from the Girl Scouts.
You got chocolate mint cookies from the Girl Scouts in exchange for that.
For saving the library.
So who is the developer that the person who asked the original question?
I think it was I think they're referring to Two Trees.
I read in the Daily News that you've taken campaign money from Republican mayoral hopeful John Catsimatidis. Given your orientation, as you've just laid it out, why would he give you money and why would you take it?
So John Catsimatidis, as you know, owns about two blocks on Myrtle Avenue in downtown Brooklyn. And I work with John Catsimatidis. He is developing Myrtle Avenue primarily between Tillery and Flatbush Avenue. He opened up a store in downtown Brooklyn, a grocery store. I worked with him to train a significant number of residents from public housing across the street. Did not cost taxpayers a dollar. I organized all of the residents in Ingersoll, Whitman, and Farragut to get jobs for the supermarket. We trained them, provided them with work skills, had them interview with John Catsimatidis, and he hired over 90% of the residents of public housing. Did not cost him a dollar, did not cost taxpayers a dollar. He was quite surprised and quite impressed with the work that I did, and because I knew everyone in downtown Brooklyn, and as a result, I guess he decided to make a contribution. But as you know, as someone who has gone against powerful interest in the city of New York, I'm unbossed and unbought. And given my campaign financing, clearly, I don't think the contributions will really have an impact on my policy decisions.
You've used the term thorn in the side to describe part of the role you would want to play as public advocate.
Yes.
Talk about that and why that's a positive thing.
So, you know, the Office of Public Advocate has the power of the bully pulpit. And it's really critically important that you have a strong voice, someone who has raised issues of concern for everyday New Yorkers, particularly against powerful interests in the city of New York. And I want to be a thorn in the side to bureaucracy, and I want to be a thorn in the side to those individuals who ignore the wishes and the wills of the people of the city of New York. All throughout the city of New York, the reason why voting patterns are down is because there's a sense that our government, unfortunately, the only one who has influence in our government is powerful interests. And we've got to change that. And that's why so many people are concerned about the direction of the city of New York. And that's why it's so critically important that we take on powerful interests in the city of New York on behalf of everyday New Yorkers, which is why it was so critically important. And it was an honor to override the mayor's veto last week. That's why it was so important to stand up for women's rights and for income equality in the city. That's why there's a concern in the city, as you know, for growing income disparity in the city. And tonight, I think it's shameful that 52,000 individuals are going to sleep homeless in the city, and a third of them are children. We can do better than that, and we should do better, and we need someone to talk about these issues and to change the narrative in the city of New York, a narrative which only, unfortunately, right now is serving the well-connected and the rich.
Any other accomplishment in your public service career that you would cite as something you have achieved at the top of your list?
Sure. Passing the Safe Housing Act in the city of New York, where tenants get immediate repairs for the conditions in their home, basically taking on some powerful equity company, private equity companies that invested in Mitchell-Lama rent-controlled buildings all throughout downtown Brooklyn, basically displacing them, where we challenged them and urged the controller to disinvest from those companies.
And 30 seconds left. Anything you want to say to the voters?
So I am the candidate for working people in the city of New York. I am the individual who has stood up against powerful interests all throughout my career as a former public defender, as a former assistant attorney general, and as someone who was elected on the independent line as the working families line. Working Families candidate, and who has served the city of New York for the past 10 years, someone who is independent, who is unbossed, unbought, and someone who will take on powerful interests on behalf of everyday New Yorkers in the city of New York.
City Council Member Letitia James, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And we again thank all the other candidates who came on just before her, Kathy Guerrero, Reshma Sojani, and Daniel Squadron. And there you have 7 minutes each. With each of the four leading candidates for New York City Public Advocate. You can go back and listen to the previous interviews if you came in the middle of it, anytime between now and September 10th. But don't forget, on primary day, go out and vote. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, when do dictionaries literally cave in to improper word uses, like literally being used to mean figuratively? Stay with us.